This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it. That's why I go for a five-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games, or whenever my favorite team is playing late. 5-Hour Energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before tip-off.
StreetEasy asked former New Yorkers if there's anything they miss about life in New York City.
Let me put it this way. House with a home theater sounds appealing. But that's until you realize you no longer have a theater district.
Whether you're looking to rent or it's time to buy, StreetEasy has the local expertise you need to never leave NYC. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. StreetEasy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
You know, a lot of times, just so the, I'll get a little insight here for the audience. When I put together the bumper music, some people say, hey, who does the bumper music? Well, I do the bumper music. Ethan kind of puts it in there. But every day I sit at home and I get inspired and I put some songs down. And a lot of times I think, you know what, Sue's going to like this one. But when I put Molly Hatchet down today, I was pretty clear that Sue probably wasn't going to like this one. But I like Gator Country anyway. It was a Casey classic. We used to play it here in St. Louis.
You were right.
Yeah. So I get that some of it might not work with you, but I do like it when Sue says, what's that? But I still went with some Southern rock today. I only
Nothing
got a couple of Molly Hatchet tunes in there.
What's this song, Gator something?
Gator Country. They're from Florida. They were down where Tom Petty was from, and remember Molly Hatchet from the 80s?
Sure.
I don't think they've been around since then. Batyanga Sargon is coming up a little bit later in the show. Paul Morrow is going to join us, but here's what Andrew Cuomo is telling people. He's running for mayor of New York City, and he's priding himself on his COVID response.
COVID, my friends, was the greatest threat faced in a generation. It was life and death. It was as serious as it gets, and it was as scary as it gets. And New York, we had it first, and we had it worst, and we were on our own. And no one knew what to do. But what did we do? We came together, we stood tall, we stood strong, and we faced the challenge head on.
Paul Morrow is here, Fox News contributor, retired NYPD inspector, and he's the founder of the opstest.org. I'm very curious, Paul, to get your opinion of what he said there on the COVID front. How are you this afternoon?
I am good. Thank you very much, Mark. Well, look, let's just go right into it. Let's recognize that the decline of New York City, which is undeniable, among its principal architects is the guy you just heard right there, Andrew Cuomo. He is blown with the wind. He will jump on any platform that he thinks will get him two more votes. And he's talking about how we were on our own in this, you know, very tendentious sort of condescending, preachy way. Well, it's funny because I seem to remember Donald Trump sending an entire ship up here to assist New York that he never accessed.
Yeah, they never used it.
Out of what very well may have been a spite. So on our own, I don't think so. He's the one who forced the old people into the nursing homes and a series of depredations and ball drops during COVID. He's really got nerve, and a lot of that's going to stick to him because it's not that long ago, and everybody in New York has a COVID story.
You know, in fairness, one thing that I would say, because I remember, and I did my show from my studio at home for almost a year, and I remember in the mornings and, you know, on variety times, he would do those updates, and let's face it, you guys were getting hit a lot harder than other parts of the country, certainly in the beginning, the early days of COVID. But then as things kind of went on, I think we all thought we were supposed to trust Andrew Cuomo, even when there were more questions raised about how he was addressing the crisis. And we just overall got it backwards. You know, we didn't concentrate on the older people. And we, you know, you couldn't run in Central Park. I remember hearing some audio from people who were upset, Paul, because people weren't masked when they were riding a bike or running in in Central Park. That's how insane some of this stuff was.
No, it was even crazier. There were people who would get mad and getting into shouting arguments in traffic because people were not masked up in a closed car in traffic.
I believe it.
I mean, literally. I mean, that's how insane they made us. And he was one of the principal cheerleaders of it. And he's also, look, the series of depredations that we're living with, thanks to that guy, it's just a laundry list of the backwoods drag on New York City. He is one of the people who got us legalized weed, so you can't walk down the block without smelling it. Meanwhile, they put in no provisions to enforce against illegal sale of it. It's still illegal for sale in New York State, never mind federally, but they put no provision for enforcement in there. And so as a result, you got well over 1,000 illegal shops selling weed. He shut down all the initiatives here relative to energy, and our energy prices skyrocketed because he shut down the Indian Point nuclear plant, and he also killed the burgeoning fracking industry in upstate New York, which is perennially depressed in terms of its economy. There are no jobs up there. Fracking was going to be one of the great saviors. He shut that down, and all of this was just to pander to progressive groups that he thought would launch him into a serious play for the White House. And then, of course, we know what happened relative to his immediate staff. I mean, I could just go on. And I think, and if you're sitting where I am, of course, his biggest original sin is that he is one of the people who full-throatedly signed on to and, in fact, exacerbated the criminal justice reforms that have just destroyed this city. And he's the guy who issued the executive order making New York State a sanctuary state. So there's just no shortage of the malfeasance, in my opinion, from this guy that we're living with here in New York City. And now he rides in on a platform that's in many cases 180 degrees from the laundry list I just laid out. And we're all supposed to forget it because it's only 2 years ago. Come on.
Common sense might dictate, especially sitting from afar here in the Midwest, that's nuts that Andrew Cuomo thinks that he could be mayor of New York. On the other hand, it's New York City, and this is the land of, you know, Congressman Wiener and things like that. So isn't it possible that he could win this?
Okay, I hope you're sitting down. You ready?
Yes.
It's probable.
Oh, that's what I was afraid of. Yeah.
Yeah. Right now, the clown car running for mayor of New York City is just like, you know, subterranean. We've got Eric Adams, who is not under indictment just by the grace of Donald Trump, but likely will be, in my opinion, re-indicted by Alvin Bragg at the state level, and who probably should still be indicted and facing trial. You've got people who are to the left of Karl Marx, who are filling out the rest of the Democratic field for the June primary. On the right, you have Curtis Sliwa, who is the, again, perennial Republican candidate.
Right.
And, you know, look, Curtis has chops. He's, you know, he comes across as a very street guy and everything else. Curtis is smart, but it's not a Republican town. That's it. And so he just kind of fills the slot. And then there's an independent named Jim Walden, who's a former federal prosecutor. And I actually think that he is going to make more noise than a lot of people realize because he's a somewhat Bloomberg-esque figure. He's a moderate, and he's going to run as an independent and essentially run from both sides. But in light of that field and some of the other people who have talked about putting a toe in the water, I think that, frankly, Cuomo will likely take the Democratic nomination in June. And then I think by the time we get to November, you're going to have a series of independents, and either the Republican Party endorses Walden, or it's going to be Curtis Sliwa again. And unfortunately, I like Curtis's opinions and his positions, but I just don't think he can win.
But you're saying Cuomo beats Adams, right? And other Democrats.
Yes.
And then you'll have a Republican and that will be the runoff. See, we got a weird situation here in St. Louis. Sue still lives in the city of St. Louis. So our election day is actually tomorrow for a primary, but it's a ranked voting type of situation. So you can vote for one or all the candidates. The top two finishers in our mayor's race square off in a few weeks. But Paul, here's something interesting from the Midwest. We kicked Kim Gardner out of office finally after her dereliction of duties. And the same mayor that we have right now, Tashara Jones, was certainly in Kim Gardner's camp, and Cori Bush. This was the cobble here in St. Louis. This one-term mayor that we have that's made everything about race, ignored basic city services and crime, is going to get booted, we think. Now, of course, we got to still count the votes, but there's an excellent chance people think she might not even make it to the second round, which is, I think that says a lot, you know, whether that makes national news, but this has certainly turned around very quickly in our city in 4 years.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it does look like, and you and I have spoken about all of this a lot, including the Gardner situation, and that's why it's important to call it out when we see it, man, because you know what? They win when we don't make any noise. And, you know, it's always easy for them to throw all kinds of awful terms at us, institutionally racist, and et cetera, et cetera. But at the end of the day, it doesn't matter if you're black, white, green, or red. You want to be safe in your own neighborhood, and that's you right. want the buses and trains to work, and that's it. It doesn't matter. And, you know, look what happened in Oakland. They threw out the DA and the mayor. And that's a hyper-blue city. Look at L.A. You know, you just got now Noah Hochman having taken over for the DA ship, you know, from Gaston, which yeah. I never thought would happen.
Right.
You know, so you've got a number of the San Francisco booted their DA, Chesa Boudin, who was a, you know, far, far left. So, look, at the end of the day, they always go too far because Democrats, they're not moderate anymore. It's become a progressive contest. They're all yeah. trying to get to the left of each other, out virtue signal each other, to the point that now at the national level, they are advocating for a guy from Ukraine who essentially says this war is nowhere near over while he's losing.
All right, so let me segue into that, because what were your thoughts on that? Getting a variety of reactions. I rather enjoyed what happened on Friday, and I'd like to, you know, to see this move forward, and we certainly want peace, but I understand President Trump's position on this, and I think the spectacle was quite interesting.
It was very interesting, and, you know, I would say one thing that I think you don't get too much about, which is the fact that it was ultra-transparent. I know diplomacy is supposed to happen behind closed doors, and then we would have got a very anodyne press release that says something like, we had a frank discussion or something like that. But it was interesting to see the sausage made. And, you know, I think it's very enlightening because now we see what we're dealing with. You have a Ukrainian president who, in my opinion, has been just seduced by the global left, by the Europeans who don't have the means to help him but love to virtue signal and say we stand with Ukraine. The pittance that the UK was able to come up with as a loan is a drop in the bucket compared to what he needs and what he was asking for from America. Only America in the landscape of people who can come to his assistance here can actually make a difference. And yet he felt so entitled and empowered that he behaved the way he did. Doesn't even show up in a suit, crosses his arms, rolls his eyes. You know, he doesn't even understand that it's beyond the point of a negotiation. You need us. Be polite, because you're coming to us. And the bottom line is, in a more prosaic and just sort of schoolyard sense, the only security guarantee he's going to get, the best security guarantee he could get, because he wants NATO, he's not getting that. So what's a de facto NATO? American business on the ground, pulling those minerals out of the ground. Putin has never attacked Ukraine while Donald Trump was in office. Both of his incursions came under Obama and then Biden. Donald Trump's right. Better than diplomacy, signed pieces of paper that people ignore. Get him, get those businesses over there. Get those people working. Create thousands of jobs. There is no way Putin's coming across the border if you have American mineral companies over there with heavy equipment creating jobs in the economy that the Ukrainians desperately need. That's his best shot. And instead, he went into that meeting with the Democrats before he went in to talk to Donald Trump. They seduced him into believing that he had the high ground and had the leverage. And they just learned that he's not dealing at this point with an 80-something-year-old man who doesn't know Europe from Disneyland and was happy to send him aircraft carriers of cash without any accountability, much of which now is missing.
I'm going to run short on time here because I want to find out your thoughts on Gene Hackman's death. But here was the headline from the New York Times yesterday. An immigrant neighborhood where Trump made inroads now fears ICE raids. In Corona, once vibrant New York City enclave to generations of Latino immigrants, the threat of mass deportations has made many residents afraid to go outside. And they offer examples here of this place that used to make about $1,600 a morning. Now it's only making $900 because you got workers that aren't there and people are afraid to show up. What is your sense of how, look, you're in the city that probably is maybe most affected by a lot of this. So what's your sense of how that's going right now?
First of all, I don't believe anything that the New York Times says, and
well,
I'm sorry,
yeah,
but I really don't, man. I've been a subject of, you know, reporting, and that they do, and I've just seen
that.
Well, it's just not what I said. So, all right, there you go. Secondly, I grew up right next door to Corona, you know, 3-4 blocks from me. Always heavily Hispanic. I used to be Italian, then I went Hispanic, primarily Puerto Rican. If the numbers are down there, I would argue that as opposed to some neighborhood paranoia where people are hiding under their beds, I don't believe a word of that. What's going on there almost certainly is the fact that the economy in New York is contracting because people are leaving in droves. Nobody's opening businesses. We're overtaxed. The streets aren't safe. And there's been no provision for the fact that we took in 250,000 migrants, some of whom, not all, but some of whom are gangbangers and don't have the means to support themselves in an information-based economy, which is growing more and more in that direction, to take in 250,000 people who are essentially unskilled laborers. We don't need, I'm sorry to say it, but we just don't need that many cooks and delivery people and things like that, the jobs that they traditionally go into. That's just a fact. And
yeah,
to bring them in and just say you support them doesn't work. And as a result, New York State, by number now, not percentage, by number, has been leading every year over the last, I think it's 2 to 3 years, in people who leave for sunnier climes. And that's no accident. People are leaving this state in droves.
Yeah. All right. On the Gene Hackman thing, we're kind of fascinated by this. We loved him as an actor. He sort of disappeared for a long time. We found out last week that he had died, and then we found out that he was maybe dead for at least 9 days. No carbon monoxide found. What's your best theory here?
Oh, all right. Let me go out on a limb since you're asking me to take a guess. I don't think it's foul play if, under the facts that we have. We don't see any indicia of the house being rifled. There's a little bit of a disparity of whether the door was open or not, but doesn't seem to be any sign of forced entry. If it is something nefarious, it's somebody close to them who could get in and out. I assume the cops are running the financials to see if anybody's accessing their accounts, on their identities, et cetera. I'm sure they're doing a lot of digital work. We heard about the pacemaker stopping, which is when he likely ended his life. You're going to be able to probably see from a lot of digital work when the phones stopped hitting the Wi-Fi, when there was no computer activity. Maybe there were no cameras, but apparently something with the alarm system, I bet they can pull. Things hitting the surrounding cell towers, et cetera. They're going to be able to narrow down the time of death. And then, of course, you got the toxicology and the autopsy. So these are some of the things they're doing along with the traditional detective work. You're asking me to guess, so I'm going to throw it out there. I am going to say that something happened to her. They apparently had a real marriage, which is so sad. You know, you don't get too many of those in Hollywood, right? But these two seem to really been devoted to each other. There is this issue of all the pills that were scattered around.
Right.
You know, I've responded to a lot of suicides. That's not uncommon. They go back for more pills. They spill all over the place, or they leave them out in case, you know, the pills don't do the job. They go back for more. I would wonder if there's a bottle of vodka there or something, because very often they accompany it with that. I am not saying that she committed suicide. I'm theorizing. You asked me to do it. But since you're asking me to guess, I would say something either natural or not nefarious, but not natural, happened to her. He was running for help. Or trying to get help. He's 95. He apparently fell. They found the cane near him. And then that's how it went.
Yeah, I think that's, maybe she has, she dies first, I think, is what we're thinking. Maybe it's a heart attack. He tries to help her. And then, unfortunately,
right.
Sue and I are just torn up about the dog being in the kennel because that's a terrible thing
as dog,
well.
Yeah.
So it's an awful situation.
Yeah.
Paul Morrow, always great to have you on. Thank you so much for the time on this Monday, Paul. Have a great week.
Anytime, Paul. Thank
you,
guys.
All right, take care. Batya Ungar Sargon, coming up from Newsweek next.
So I read in USA Today that the majority of people stop GLP-1 weight loss injection shots in a year. Now, what's concerning is if you get off GLP-1s, there's a real chance you can gain all the weight back. The solution? Alma said, a natural superfood protein shake. University studies show it optimizes your metabolism so you can lose weight easily, and Alma said it's been scientifically proven to preserve muscle mass. Use Alma said with GLP-1s or as a natural alternative. Find out more and see the university studies at almased.com. That's almased.com.
Hey, sports fans, it's Mason Crosby.
And Reese Crosby. If you enjoy football, and brotherly banter, be sure to check out Kicking It with the Crosbys.
Here's some stories from my NFL playing days, goofy conversations about everyday life, giving you entertaining lessons on the pitches across the pond, fun, relatable guests, and what it means to live life on purpose.
New episodes drop every Tuesday and Thursday. Be sure to subscribe to Kicking It with the Crosbys on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, fresh off what happened in the Oval Office on Friday with Zelensky, here's what President Trump said today.
I think everybody has to get into a room, so to speak, and we have to make a deal. And the deal can be made very fast. It should not be that hard a deal to make. It could be made very fast. Now, maybe somebody doesn't want to make a deal. And if somebody doesn't want to make a deal, I think that person won't be around very long. That person will not be listened to very long. Because I believe that Russia wants to make a deal. I believe certainly the people of Ukraine want to make a deal. They've suffered more than anybody else. We talk about suffering. They've suffered.
So people asked me on Friday, and they continued, you know, friends and people I know, what'd you think of all that? I loved it. I loved it. Some people said, no, I don't like it. Trump's a bully. You know, he made Putin be the good guy here. I understand there were some things that President Trump said that I don't agree with, especially who started the conflict. But I loved it. And I know I'm not a geopolitical expert, but let's talk to someone who might agree with me. Batyagar Sargsyan is with us this afternoon. Columnist for the Free Press, of course, has written great books like Bad News, How Woke Media is Undermining Democracy. You kind of liked it, too, on Friday, didn't you?
I loved it.
Yes.
I loved it. It made me so proud to be an American and so proud to have voted for President Trump. It's so insanely rare to have an American president actually stand up for the American people. And that is, of course, what President Trump was doing. The mainstream media was saying, oh, look, he was bullying a weak ally. No, he was standing up for the bullied, abused, used, and fleeced American taxpayer upon whose back the American middle class, the entire post-war international liberal order has rested and has simply sucked the wages of up into the pockets of the elites, who, of course, don't want this war to end. It was absolutely stunning to see President Trump get angry on our behalf. He wasn't angry on his own behalf. He was angry on our behalf and on behalf of the million men who have died in this ridiculous, needless conflict because the elites benefit from war, and Donald Trump said no more.
Batya, what I said earlier, and that was so well stated, and I've seen your tweets on this, and I read the column in the Free Press, but I kind of got into it with a friend of mine over the weekend that I don't usually get into it over, and he was, you know, offering some of the tropes on Trump with Putin, blah, blah, blah. But I think that one of the dynamics, and you highlight this all the time, and you sort of just did, is that there's this, the white educated Americans, you know, the elites, the ruling class, they don't get that normal people in this country are done with this crap. And there's an unwillingness to understand, I think, from a fair number of people on the left, how many people support this. Like, some of us voted for this, right?
78% of Americans want Ukraine and Russia to sit down and negotiate a peace to an end and a peace to this war right now. 78% of Americans. Now, 100% of the liberal mainstream journalists want Ukraine to keep fighting with our taxpayer dollars. That's fine. You know, they could go join Europe because that's what the European leaders want. They want us to keep paying for this war that has nothing to do with us. And Donald Trump says, no, no more. And you know, Mark, it's so amazing to see them slipping back into Russiagate, Russia, 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 Putin and Trump. Trump is a Putin puppet, blah, 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 blah. Here's the thing your listeners need to understand, okay? They don't hate Trump because they think he's in Putin's pocket. They hate Putin because they think he got Trump elected in 2016. And they hate anybody who they think helped Trump. Now, of course, Trump would have won either way, as we saw this time around. He's unbelievably popular. And the platform that he's enacting every single day is unbelievably, unbelievably popular. Every single plank, 65 to 80% support among the American people. We know who the last 15% are. It's the people who hate this country, okay? So we Agreed. Know that it's nonsense, but they blame Putin for helping Trump win, for getting the working class choice into office, for getting working class people what they want and what they voted for. They hate Putin because they blame him for what is nothing more than a functioning American democracy. And because they blame Putin for that, that's why they love Zelensky. They don't have any feelings for Ukraine. They don't care. They don't know where Ukraine is on a map. They never thought about it for a second before Hillary Clinton blamed Putin for 2016.
You're bringing the fire, Batya, this afternoon. In the Free Press piece that you wrote, though, was this a poll? You cited something that this David Burrell did of WIC Insights, where he polled 1,000 people, and he showed the video from what happened last week to these people?
Yeah, exactly. He showed them the 11-minute clip. He didn't show the whole 50 minutes, right? Because we know 40 minutes, it was
very civil. Right.
Even though you can see, as it dawns on Trump, as again and again Zelensky says we need security guarantees, it dawns on Trump halfway through, and you can really see when he realizes it, that Zelensky is trying to rewrite the agreement in real time before the press, right? And that's why Trump, I think, ultimately like let loose on him, because he wanted the people to see what was actually happening there, which is that he was offering an economic agreement, and Zelensky was trying to turn it into a security agreement, the kind that we have with our NATO allies, which Ukraine is not going to get. So he showed them the 11 minutes at the end where it sort of broke down, mm-hmm. where J.D. Vance starts challenging Zelensky. Zelensky yells back and challenges, and then Trump sort of, you know, yells at Zelensky for, you know, 5 minutes, and then, you know, says basically this meeting is over. And he showed it to 1,000 registered voters whose breakdown as Democrats and Republicans is the same as the population at large. And only about, you know, less than half of them thought that Trump had behaved inappropriately. 62% of them said that they found Zelensky's comments offensive, that the war is going to come to the United States at some point. Only a third of them thought that Trump behaved inappropriately at all. You know, they didn't really think Zelensky had behaved terribly either. They just thought, okay, this is what happens between two leaders who disagree on things. And then CNN did a poll, and in that poll they found that 78% of Americans want a negotiated end right now.
What is the expectation on the other side? I mean, this is the question I asked my friend. What do you want to have happen? What's going to end this? If we're not going to go for a ceasefire, if Zelensky's not going to, you know, give. Now, I agree that you have to put Putin, you know, on notice here, too. And there's going to have to be something. I'm not smart enough, Batya, to understand all the delicacies and the particulars of the negotiations. But the bottom line is this war is unwinnable. I mean, I think that's one of the big issues here. It'd be a different scenario if we could win it without American troops. I don't see that scenario.
Well, I mean, that's exactly right. I mean, Putin has endless cannon fodder and nuclear weapons. You know, people keep saying Putin can't be allowed to win. I mean, he's won because he has nuclear weapons and endless cannon fodder. So he can keep fighting this forever. And Ukraine can only keep fighting this with our help for as long as we're willing to fund it. And we're not willing to fund it anymore. So it is over. And the fact is, the elites have gotten by, have coasted off the backs of the disappearing American middle class for so long without being answerable to them, that they think that it's their party. They think that they get to just dictate things, and that the will of the American people, 78% of their fellow Americans, should mean bupkis. And this is how they have been allowed to get away with things for the last decades. I mean, under Obama, under Biden for sure, you know, under the Bushes, under Clinton. I mean, which of these leaders cared, gave 2 cents what the American people wanted? None of them.
That's a valid question.
Trump is the first one to say, I'm going to do what I was elected to serve, and I am here to serve, and this is what the American people want.
The other thing about all the complaints is that these are people, by the way, who have apparently complete amnesia on what happened the last 3.5-4 years with the guy in the White House not even be able to get a couple of words out. But they don't address that at all.
Oh, yeah, of course. I mean, that was perfect for them because they had no resistance to implementing, you know, the will of the Blinkens and the Sullivans and the other elites in the foreign policy, you know, and Raytheon and all of the, you know, military industrial complex, all the people getting rich off of this, all off of the needless death of 1 million young men, the destruction of 2 countries, you know. They loved that because they didn't have to face up to the music.
That's,
you know,
right.
They could just have whatever they wanted.
Yeah, well, this is a good time as I let you go to recommend a film that I always tell people they should watch. It's a documentary from probably 20 years ago, and it's called Why We Fight. And it's framed around Eisenhower's military-industrial complex speech. And it's really, really good. And unfortunately, Why We Fight is kind of what you just indicated here. There's a lot of money on the line, right? And that's a big motivation. Look, St. Louis benefits. We got Boeing. We have, you know, defense contracts. We understand that. But some of this needs to be under control and under Doja's watch. I think we realize that. Batya, thanks for bringing the fire. You always do. I appreciate it. And is the Free Press kind of a new gig?
Yes, yeah, recent thing, yep, that's right.
I love the Free Press. They're doing great work over there. Some of the only journalism. TheFP.com, I believe, is the website. Thank you, Batya.
Thank you
All right,
so much.
I appreciate it. That was great. Oh, man, I love her sometimes. She just brings it and is a great voice of reason and common sense. You said, before I get to audio cut of the day, because I have a couple of things picked out here, but you said that you listened to the entire Joe Rogan Elon Musk podcast, or at least a good portion of it.
A good portion.
So let me play some of this, because I'm not a conspiracy theorist. You know this, Sue, right?
Yeah.
But the one thing that you and I agree on, I think a lot of people agree on right now, is we don't have a lot of answers about the kid that tried to kill Trump.
We don't.
Right? It's just bizarre to me that we don't have those answers. So that was a topic that came up here on this podcast. Here's something I missed completely. Did you know that this kid was in a BlackRock commercial a couple years ago?
Nope.
Okay, listen to the exchange here.
Why did that guy try to kill Trump and almost succeeded? Why did he do that?
Well, I'd like to know that.
Well, yeah, but
that one's crazy. You know the whole deal with that guy's house, professionally scrubbed. No footprint on the internet, no social media footprint.
Yeah, there's 0% chance that he has no social media footprint.
He was in a BlackRock commercial.
Do you think BlackRock's a bad company?
I don't think any company is a bad company.
Okay.
I think their design is to make as much money as humanly possible. And I think if you're trying to make as much money as humanly possible, you're going to do some things that aren't necessarily good. The question is, if you're going to have an assassination attempt on the president, it's not like BlackRock's board sits down and votes on it.
Yeah.
No, this problem, right?
That would be awkward. You know, being the board minutes, if you're like, guys, remember that time when we said,
yeah,
we probably shouldn't have done that. You know?
I highly doubt it would be a corporation that chooses to do something like this.
Okay, so like kind of dancing around the edges of any kind of motivation for an assassination, you can make your judgments from there. But I just want to point out, look, BlackRock is a huge investment firm. Why was Thomas Crooks weird in an ad? And that's not just made up. That really happened. They actually scrubbed him from the particular ad. But then they kind of said this here.
I think more likely it's individuals involved that recognize that it's beneficial to them if he gets assassinated. And so a small group of people carry something out. And with this kid, we don't know anything, right? And everyone stopped asking questions, and there was never a formal report.
It's
mind-boggling.
So, like, again, here I am, and ordinarily I might say, come on, Joe Rogan, this is not... But I'd like to know some answers to the questions, and there are not answers to some of these questions.
Ever press conferences where they detailed all the information that we know currently and where the investigation stands at the moment. What we know is you have a very young kid who was filmed. They knew he was there with a rangefinder a half an hour before the event. You also know that CNN streamed it live, which I do not believe they did for any other rally. And certainly not for a rally that's in the middle of nowhere in Pennsylvania. Like, there's a lot of weird shit. The fact that they wouldn't let people be on that roof because the Secret Service lady said it was sloped and it was dangerous. That's what she didn't want to have. Meanwhile, the snipers that were on the other roof was a steeper pitch. It made sense.
I totally agree. It makes no sense.
So I'm going to agree with most of that. And I do agree overall that it doesn't make any sense. The CNN aspect of this, because he seems to be indicating, oh, CNN is involved in this, that's why they aired it live. Here's what I'd say about that. It was a Saturday afternoon. The news business, believe it or not, is just like the economy. It's supply and demand, right?
It is.
So I would tell you that what was happening in the presidential campaign at that moment is Trump was surging because it was in the aftermath several weeks after the debate performance. And I can't remember if this was something that happened. You tell me, Sue, was the assassination attempt before Biden pulled out, right? Yeah.
Oh, yes,
it was. Right.
Yes.
So, yeah. So a lot of the focus was still on Biden, whether or not he's going to pull up. And here's what I remember about that. So, this is coming together. I never really flush this out on the show, but you might remember an indication, and this started maybe a year ago, that I was having some dialogue with Bob Costas.
Yes,
right?
I do remember.
And Bob had reached out. Now, look, I've never even shaken Bob Costas' hand. He's been on my show number of times over the years, especially on Camo X, to talk sports or to promote Cardinal Glennon, Children's
right.
Hospital, etc. But he had reached out proactively a year ago. It was probably closer to May. And he wanted to have a conversation. He felt like he wanted to have a conversation with St. Louis about his perspectives because he had gone on. It was Michael Smirkanish's show on CNN and also Bill Maher's show talking about some things. And he was saying, look, and in fairness to Bob, he was calling Biden out saying, look, this guy has got to go. They're not going to be able to win with him. He was very
right.
worried. But he's not. Bob's a TDS guy. He doesn't like Trump at all. But the night before, see, this is all coming back to me. The night before the assassination attempt, on that Friday, I had not heard from Bob in a while, and I reached out to him on that Friday and said, hey, just kind of thinking about you and what your thoughts are, because we were having a dialogue between a lot of this, and then it increased after after the debate, and I still was thinking about putting him on, because I thought, I'm just going to be candid, you know, I wanted an opportunity to have him on, and part of my motivation was to get some attention to this damn show.
Right.
Because I knew this bonehead right. in the St. Louis Post-Dispatch that writes about all this stuff all the time would write a column, and he'd promote it, and let's face it, Odyssey's not taking out billboards for me here in St. Louis.
Right.
But I had a lot of people that didn't think it was a good idea. So on that Friday night, I called Costas and we talked for a half an hour about this stuff, going back and forth. It was a very civil conversation. There were some points about Biden that he wanted to make. I mean, he thought Biden should absolutely get out at that time.
Did he?
He had been,
okay.
his part of Bob's point was, I've been saying some of this stuff for a while, and in fairness, he had been, but then the assassination attempt took place. We had agreed. It was funny because I said, all right, well, let's get on a call with my boss, Steve Moore. And Bob's like, yeah, let's do it Monday at 1 o'clock. Okay. So I texted Steve on Saturday. I said, hey, Costas and I would like to get on the phone with you on Monday just because I want to hash this
right.
out. And Steve responds at like 2 o'clock that Saturday afternoon. Yes, 1 o'clock. That's good. The assassination attempt is probably, what, 2 hours later?
Yeah.
If that. And I texted Bob the next day. I said, well, I think the circumstances have kind of changed here. Let's put this on hold. And he agreed. And then we've never spoken since for no other reason that the whole thing kind of worked itself out.
It did.
And I don't even know what his thoughts might have been on Kamala Harris. But the point is that going back to the original point here, so much happened that day that we don't know about. And it's weird the way the media has even handled this.
Agreed. And if this were someone besides Trump, I think we would know every detail.
Look, Sue, I think
here's
so,
what happened. We followed it to the nth degree. But also, there was somebody else on Rogan who was more involved in that, who was talking about the fact that nobody really got fired. I mean, the FBI or woman stepped down, but nobody really lost their job.
Yeah, that's ridiculous,
the Secret
too.
Service. I'm sorry. That's who I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
And none of that was covered, so life just goes on. Now, if that were reversed and it was someone else, would that be the case? Oh, my goodness.
Well, you'd almost think that Trump would talk a little bit more about this, not that he doesn't have more important things on his plate, but we're going to get Selena Zito on, who was there the day of the assassination attempt and is writing a book about this that I've already pre-ordered. And, you know, she's raised these points. I've seen her on Twitter about Thomas Crooks and the mystery behind all this, so we'll see if we can get her on tomorrow to talk about it. Audio cut of the day is coming up. It's my favorite song right now. Dude is called Role Model, or it's not really a band. You know how just people, I was very confused by The Weeknd years ago. Younger people had to correct me, Sue. The Weeknd is not a band.
Right.
The Weeknd is a dude, right?
Right.
Same thing with this guy here, Role Model. He's kind of a rapper, but this is a song that's very roots rocky, and I like it quite a bit, called Sally When the Wine Runs Out. Let's do audio cut of the day before we get out of here this afternoon.
Now, the audio cut of the day.
All right, I played a lot of audio. I'm going to keep this one short. This is an actress by the name of KJ Smith. Nobody knows her, but she's making news because she was at the NAACP My Mistake Image Awards, and she thinks that black people in this country should go back to Africa because of the political climate here in America. I'm not making this up.
That you wish was talked about more within our community.
Understanding our roots, I think it's really important. I think we're not trapped here. With the political climate that's going on in the United States of America, we are not trapped here. There are places that we can go. There are countries that are receiving us back, citizenship back, and I think with open arms, and I think that it's time for the black community as a whole to start looking into those resources.
There you go. That's the answer, African Americans, especially if you're not happy with the leadership here in St. Louis. Don't vote in the mayor's race tomorrow. Go back to Africa. That's your message from an African American actress, KJ Smith. Good Lord.
Get more at 971talk.com.